Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Gremling. I'm joined once again by Jenny Prentice of the Weak Side Podcast. And Jenny, we have Super Bowl teams. We had games that were pretty okay on Sunday, I guess. Moderate excitement.
Better than last weekend, although the Chiefs-Bills game dragged a little bit and took several minutes to sort out the offsetting penalties, which was probably one of the more anticlimactic points of any game this playoffs.
Yes, we all sat there waiting for ejections or something, and then you just had, well, you had three penalties on the Bills and one on the Chiefs, and that offsets, according to the NFL rulebook. That is even Steven. Everyone got their shots in.
Yeah, that was... It was just absurd to think about three versus one, but that's how it's written. And, you know, could be fodder for some potential debates over future rule changes, Gary.
I was going to say, if it had happened in a game that was competitive, we'd probably be having this conversation. But we'll just leave it there then, because I haven't really thought about it at all. Didn't really affect anyone's life.
Didn't affect anyone, except all of us waiting for the conclusion of the game.
That is very true. In a way, all penalties offset when it's all said and done. But as far as this show goes, we are going to break down the two Sunday games, the two championship weekend games. We are also going to talk a little bit of Matthew Stafford, put on the trade block, and we'll see how that plays out, who might get him, and quite frankly, what someone's going to have to give up to get for him. Because I see some folks, I think, maybe underselling what the Lions will get in exchange for Matthew Stafford. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We're going to start, again, going chronologically backward. We're going to travel back in time. We will start with the Chiefs' victory over the Bills. And I don't really know what answers anyone could possibly have for this Chiefs offense other than, okay, we're just going to overwhelm Patrick Mahomes with the pass rush and that's going to be it, because there was no stopping Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill in this game.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. You go into the game, you know that Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are the opponent's biggest weapons. You know they're the people that you have to stop, and yet you can't stop them. And that's the reality of any team facing the Chiefs this season. And there were games this year when the Chiefs offense wasn't up to the level we expected. And there was a little bit of a narrative going into this game, like they're not firing on all cylinders. This isn't, the Chiefs offense at its peak. But I think more of those were self-inflicted issues rather than any opponent having some great game plan to slow them down.
It felt like they're kind of keeping some things in their pocket, perhaps. And and look, the Bills went with a similar tack that they went with against the Chiefs back in week six, which is they played coverage. They said, we're not going to give up big plays. We're not going to let our guys get beat over the top, and didn't do a lot of blitzing the first half. They got pressure on Mahomes a couple of times. He had no Mitchell Schwartz in this game, and Eric Fisher went down later. We'll get into that. But no Mitchell Schwartz. You had a couple of protection breakdowns that just allowed a free runner to come at Mahomes, and it happened on back-to-back plays. Matt Milano had a free, clear shot on Mahomes on a third and six. Couldn't get him on the ground. Mahomes flings it to Travis Kelce, 11 yards. Next play, A.J. Epinesa breaks through, wins easily in his pass rush, gets in there and just gets hands on Mahomes but doesn't get him down. And then Mahomes flings it to Tyreek Hill. It turns into 33 yards. And two plays later, instead of having to punt, the Chiefs are in the end zone.
Yeah, you need more than one rusher to get to Mahomes is often the way that it works out, because you kind of have to corral him. You know that he can scoot out to one side or the other. You know he's excellent throwing on the run. He's excellent throwing off balance. That's become such a big part of his game. So even if you have a free rusher, that you still don't have a great chance of getting him down.
He's such a liar about his toe. His toe was not hurt.
I mean, I know. They made it seem like, well, he's cleared from the concussion protocol, but the toe might still be an issue coming into this game, or at least Andy Reid left open that possibility, and it was clear there was no impediment there.
I was going to say, it was made out to be like this gangrenous toe that was going to have to be removed mid-game or something like that. No, he was moving around fine. It was, I would have been, and I don't hope to see this, but I would have been very curious to see Patrick Mahomes with limited mobility play in a big game like this. But he was maybe ever so slightly limited. He was fine. He was Patrick Mahomes in this game.
Yeah, and to your earlier point about the Chiefs keeping some tricks in their pocket, I think that is what makes them so dangerous. And, you know, Andy Reid has this endless playbook that he kind of cycles through from different decades. He pulls from even his high school playbook at one point, he told me. So there are so many different things they can incorporate into a game plan at any given time. And I think that was a reason why, Gary, that this looked more like the score at will, explosive, you know, freewheeling Chiefs offense that really has defined them during this, what looks like the beginning of a dynasty.
I know. It does just kind of feel like 15 years from now, we're going to look back and it's going to be like, oh, remember those 1 or 2 years that the Chiefs didn't make the Super Bowl? Like, this is basically going to be what the Patriots did for a couple of years, except I don't know if you're going to have that gap. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves. You don't need to project the 2034 season yet, but there's just no reason to look at this and say, like, they're going to be heavy favorites in the AFC every year for the next decade.
Yeah, and I remember working on the Super Bowl story last year. Andy Reid, of course, was still trying to win his first Super Bowl at that time while we were reporting it leading up to the game. And all these people who had worked with him said it's taken him a long time to get to winning his first Super Bowl as a head coach. But with this team and with Mahomes and with this partnership, that they all just had this sense that once he got one, he would just be able to rattle off more. Now, again, they still have to face Brady, and you know, we saw the Seahawks in this position where they win one and they're back the next year and it didn't work out the way they planned. But this is a different situation, and it does have that feeling, Gary, that, you know, he waited for so long to break the dam, and now that he's in this position, he could have the ability to be in a position to contend for a Super Bowl every year with Reid and Mahomes together.
So the Chiefs defense, who will never be noticed no matter how well they play, Steve Spagnuolo, it just does a tremendous job. They took Stephon Diggs away in this game. And the other thing that took away in this game was when you blitz Josh Allen, I think early in the year, the Bills sort of built in some stuff in structure to beat the blitz. But later in the year, it was a lot of Josh Allen rolling right and sort of making plays out of structure when they faced pressure. They took that away from him. Allen was not able to flush right in this game. But more than that, and it's tough to say without seeing the coach's film first, but Stephon Diggs did his usual number of alignments in this game, and just he wasn't available. He didn't do anything in this game.
Yeah, the coverage on the back end was really fantastic, and there were just a lot of plays where it didn't seem like Allen had any options, and Diggs has been that player who's been an option for Allen, even in a, you know, situation where it looks like the play's not going anywhere, but Diggs and Allen will find a way. And that was the difference in this game, that they didn't have that connection, or there weren't those opportunities for them to make a play together.
The Bills are in a, I don't want to say they're in a strange place going forward. I mean, they have a young franchise quarterback who just played at MVP level. They obviously have an offense that will rightfully be expected to put up a ton of points next year. But this defense had been so good the last couple of years, and they weren't bad this year. And certainly they were much better down the stretch. And look, lots of defenses are not going to play well against this Chiefs offense. But you wonder if they can get back to that sort of dominating defense that they had a couple of years ago to match this offense. Because when it's all said and done, they're going to be chasing the Chiefs pretty much until the end of time here.
Yeah, and their division is interesting. The Dolphins are up and coming. The Patriots had a down year, but could very easily figure things out. Maybe the Jets trade for Deshaun Watson. You know, lots of possibilities here, Gary. So I agree with you. In a lot of ways, it, you know, felt like with the steps forward that Allen was taking, this could have been their year. But you're right. They needed that component that they'd had in previous years when Allen hadn't reached the level that he reached this year.
Yeah. Jerry Hughes is getting older. Tremaine Edmonds and Ed Oliver have to be better than they were this year. I think everyone was sort of wondering if they would be superstars this year. They just didn't play very well for the most part. But this is a spot. I mean, you look at the teams with the young quarterbacks and you say those are the teams that could possibly rise up and challenge the Chiefs for the next couple of years. And the Bills are certainly one of those teams. But this defense has to sort of get back playing at the kind of near elite level they were at the previous few seasons when the offense was not quite ready yet. All right, hang on 1 second, Jenny. It is time for the SI Fantasy segment brought to you, as always, by our friends at DraftKings. And we are joined by my friend, Michael Fabiano. Fabs, we are going to talk a little bit about 2021 look ahead for the teams who maybe won't be playing in the Super Bowl. The two teams that lost this week. Let's start with the Packers. And there's some buzz. Oh, yeah, is Aaron Rodgers? Does he want out? You know, some cryptic things said. I personally, and you can feel free to disagree, I personally would be stunned if Aaron Rodgers is not the starting quarterback next year. However, we have maybe a change in the backfield coming here for the Packers, and that's a huge fantasy impact.
First off, I would totally agree. If Rodgers is in any uniform but a Green Bay Packers uniform next season, it would be an absolute shock. Hey, these guys make comments when they're emotional, when they're coming off of the biggest loss of the season. And Matt LaFleur had said that there's no way that, you know, he wouldn't want Rodgers back. And LaFleur is going to be kicking himself for not going for it on fourth down rather than kicking a field goal as well. So looking at what might be different in Green Bay, and you hit the nail on the head. You've got Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, both free agents. Some Packers fans may be left with a bad taste in their mouth when it comes to Jones because of what happened in the game. I would love to see him go to Atlanta or a team that's got a void in their backfield. And then you give that starting job to AJ Dillon, you bring back Jamal Williams as a free agent, and you go from there. I would also like to see the Packers get a little bit of help at the wide receiver position. Mm. Alan Lazard is an exclusive rights free agent, so he's not a unrestricted free agent. But Green Bay, maybe learning from the mistakes of last season, might want to get Aaron Rodgers a little more help. And we've seen some rookie wide receivers come into this league very recently and put up very good numbers. So that would be the major changes. Robert Tonyan is also, I believe he's a restricted free agent. I would think they're going to hold on to him. So, but that backfield could look somewhat different. But as I mentioned, and you said, Rodgers being in anything but a Packers uniform would still be somewhat of a shock to me.
It would. Yeah, I can't. It's such a bummer to end the season that way. But well, gosh, when you step back, it's like
they had their chances, MVP. Man. Listen, yeah. I mean, Rodgers had the entire right side of the end zone empty for him to just run that score in, and the Packers have the lead. Mm-hmm. Instead, he decided to throw it for some reason, because Rodgers is not Drew Bledsoe. It's not like he looks to throw because he's not mobile. Like, he's not Lamar Jackson, but he's not a statue. He could have gotten in there. I think he could have gotten there easily. And then, you know, they missed on the touchdown to Devontae Adams. Equanimeous St. Brown dropped one. Tom Brady got picked off three times. They couldn't turn those turnovers into anything significant on the scoreboard. Green Bay, you can't blame it all on LaFleur. You can't blame it all on Rodgers. You can't blame it on Aaron Jones. It is what it is. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers just won the game. Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback to ever play. I'm excited to see Brady against Mahomes, but I can understand why the Packers and their fans are certainly disappointed after this weekend.
It's just like, you can run it back next year. And it's always, you say that about every team that gets deep into the playoffs, you say like, well, they'll be back. And they're not always back. That's not the case with everyone. But that team, what they did is very sustainable going into 2021. I can't imagine, even if Aaron Rodgers is not a sentimental man about Green Bay, which I think he is, but even if he took that away, they're ready to win the Super Bowl. Go back to
back losses in the NFC Championship game.
Yep.
Last year, I don't think that team was nearly as good as the team that they mm-hmm. put out on the field this season. Like they had every chance to beat Tampa Bay, and ultimately a few odd decisions cost them.
Well, let's talk about the Bills here. They're another team. They're going to be pretty much the same core back offensively here. That's a very good thing. I mean, Josh Allen, I would imagine, is going to be one of the top five quarterbacks off the draft, off the board in drafts next year.
Yeah, he'll probably be two. No. I'd say Mahomes and then Josh probably will be two. Lamar will figure into there as well. There's a handful of others, mm-hmm. but I think Allen probably has earned. He was the QB1. It wasn't Mahomes.
Yeah,
it was Allen. He was the QB1. Allen had quietly one of the greatest fantasy seasons of all time among quarterbacks. It wasn't as good as Lamar last year or Mahomes the year before, but it was damn good. It was just under 400 points that he scored. He was very good this season. Their wide receivers will likely be the same crew coming back. Of course, you got Diggs, who's coming off a career season. You got John Brown. You've got Cole Beasley. And I would suggest, although they did draft Zach Moss in 2020, they still need help in the backfield. Mm-hmm. Devin Singletary he's an okay player, but he's not a number one. I mean, TJ Yeldon looked better than him against Kansas City, which is not a compliment. So I think if they get themselves a back, and they're going to be returning to being the favorites in the AFC East, it's going to be them in Miami, unless the Jets go crazy, get Deshaun Watson, make a whole bunch of other moves, and then, of course, they would be in the mix. Notice I didn't mention the Patriots there. But Buffalo's still going to have a very fantasy-friendly team. That offense is going to be very good, and Josh Allen's going to learn from this very disappointing experience, but it is an experience nonetheless in the playoffs. And, a lot of times teams like this, like it takes a year or two before they actually get to the Super Bowl, right? Even like I remember the great Cowboys teams. Right, we had it going, and we got our asses handed to us by Detroit, and Detroit ended up beating us, and then going to Washington, getting beat. Washington ended up going to win in the Super Bowl, and then it wasn't until the following year when the Cowboys actually got there. Like so, you talk about how Michael Jordan had to get past the Pistons, right, and the Pistons had to get by the Celtics. Like sometimes teams, take a year or two, and maybe it's going to take Buffalo another year or two to get past Kansas City because they're going to be the favorite every year for as long as Patrick Mahomes is under center, it seems.
It sucks to be in the AFC right now if you're not the
Chiefs. I know, really dude. Does. It's bananas, dude. I feel like maybe Brady, in his ultimate wisdom, said, you know what? I don't have a lot of talent in New England. Of course, I love Boston. I love New England. Mm-hmm. This Mahomes guy's pretty good, though. Maybe I need to get out of this conference to get back to the Super Bowl, right?
Man, you're not kidding. Yeah, it's it just felt like one of those things. It's like, yeah, this feels like a run that's going to be like, oh, yeah. Remember that time the Chiefs went to the Super Bowl 12 times in 14 years or whatever it is? It feels like we're at the beginning of that.
It does.
Which is really impressive. I don't know if Patrick Mahomes will quite be the villain that maybe Tom Brady was at the height of that.
I guess if you win enough, there's going to be folks out there who just – hate you out of jealousy.
Yep. Well, let's talk Matthew Stafford here. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Rodgers probably not going anywhere. Deshaun Watson maybe going somewhere. But mm-hmm. it looks like Stafford's going to be out there. Mutual decision. He's going to and it's right. It's the right decision for the franchise. It's the right decision for the quarterback who probably has. I mean, you could argue he has 4 or 5 years left in sort of the back end of his prime here, but. Mm-hmm. If you had kind of a wish list for where he lands from a fantasy standpoint, where would you like him to go, Fabs?
Are we talking realistically or fantasy? Right? And I live in the fantasy world, so I'll say even if it doesn't look realistic because the cap numbers are horrible,
yeah,
I'd love to see him in New Orleans. Like,
oh,
really?
That's damn. Realistic enough.
I mean, their cap number, they're about $100 million over the cap, like, but they'll figure it out. So New Orleans would be great. San Francisco would be great, and then Garoppolo would go back to New England. That might happen. I'd love the Colts would be great. Denver does this. Denver goes out and signs these veteran quarterbacks. They did it with Peyton, right? I mean, they did it with Flacco. It didn't work out, of course, with Flacco. Drew Block, I don't know if he's the answer there. I don't know if he's going to be there long term. But that, imagine Stafford with that core of wide receivers and Noah Fant. Woo!
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly other teams that could, you know, that could use Stafford's services. But I think though Washington is another one. They need a quarterback. And I know maybe it's going to be Cam because Cam's got the Riverboat Ron connection.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't Martin Mayhew draft Stafford in Detroit? So is there a connect, right?
Was it Mayhew who drafted him that year? I think you're right. I think Millen was out and Mayhew was in at that point.
So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I think we can check in on that. But so Washington would have some interest in him as well. Where this could be a good move from a fantasy perspective is that Stafford goes to a team that's got a lot of talent around him, improves the value of those players around him. Detroit's going to have a whole new look potentially. Kenny G's a free agent. Marvin Jones is a free agent. I'd love to see them get like Josh Fields.
Yeah.
That would bring a lot of excitement to the franchise. I mean, Dan Campbell, I don't know if he's, you know, going to be biting kneecaps or whatever the hell that was all about. I have no idea. But, you know, Detroit's got to get, you know, fresh start, man. You get an exciting quarterback in there like Josh Fields. I think he could follow them in the first round. I think he could. I've seen Daniel Jeremiah, my guy over at NFL Network, redid his mock draft when Stafford was reportedly in agreement to part ways with Detroit. And he put Fields in Detroit.
Yeah.
It could be somebody else, but Detroit's, you know, I think it's time to, you know, get a fresh start and get a good quarterback in there. A lot of good young quarterbacks coming out of that, you know, those college ranks, man, the last few years. So I think that would be fun. Detroit's going to be, could be very different if Jones walks and or Galladay walks. Like Galladay could end up in any number of places, Jacksonville, Baltimore. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that could use a number one wide receiver. But Stafford, New Orleans would be my top pick. Although again, maybe that's more fantasy than reality. The Niners, Denver, certainly in the mix there as well. Washington, like I said, also we'll be looking for quarterback help. So there are going to be no shortage of suitors, and the Colts will be on that list as well.
Yeah, Anthony Lynn there in Detroit now too. So you know he's a guy who has utilized these mobile quarterbacks well. So you get him a Justin Fields, you get him a Trey Lance. Zach Wilson is also mobile, but maybe not too. I think Lance and Fields are sort of, they can be almost foundational guys in your mm-hmm. rushing offense if you want to use them that way.
And we love those rushing quarterbacks in fantasy football. You know that. Mm-hmm. So yep, we mm-hmm. love them.
And by the way, Fabs, when you started to say you were going to give me the fantasy pick for, I thought you were going to say like Chiefs. I thought you were going to say like trade to Kansas City. Tyreek and Kelsey.
Because like, you know, I'm going to be doing my offseason wish list here in a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. probably after the Super Bowl. And, you know, when I do these in the past, people are like, well, that can never happen because of the salary cap. It's fantasy. This is what I wish for. Okay. It's not like Wonder Woman 1984, which was garbage, by the way, where the wishes came true. And everything was going to be reality. It's not what I'm talking about. What a bad movie that was. But I'm just saying, I would love if the Saints can figure it out. Think about Stafford in New Orleans with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. Jared Cook's a free agent, but they got Adam Trautman. Emmanuel Sanders is going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, Traquan like that. They got some weapons there. You put Stafford in that offense. Sean Payton calling the plays. Giddy up. I'd love that.
Everything looks better than Detroit minus Kenny Galladay that he was playing in last year.
Jameis Winston might not like that so much. But,
right.
I do.
Right.
Taysom Hill.
All right, Fabs. We got Super Bowl stuff coming up in the next couple shows here, and we'll have plenty more off-season talk where we want guys landing. It's going to be, it's going to be a mind-blowing off-season here in the NFL.
Dude,
lots of big names.
So much fun. We're going to have big name wide receivers on the move, I think. Quarterbacks moving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's and we might have the seventh Super Bowl championship for Tom Brady. That's just bananas. It's just bananas. I grew up watching Joe Montana, and I always thought he was the greatest of all time, and I'm a Cowboys fan. Brady's there's no question. You can't. Yeah. I don't care if you could hate him all day long. This is his 10th freaking Super Bowl. 10.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's the only quarterback to win both conferences, to be playing in a Super Bowl for two different teams, two different conferences. I mean, like, dude, they were a 5 seed, and I know he's got a lot of talent around him. We've seen plenty of teams with a lot of talent that fell on their faces. Plenty. Look at my Cowboys for the last 2 years. Tom Brady went in there and he won the conference at 43 years old. And he's got a shot to go 7-3. 7-3 in the Super Bowl. 10 Super Bowl appearances.
Went to New Orleans, went to Green Bay. That's how it goes.
There are gonna be teams in the history of the National Football League that won't ever get to half of those number of Super Bowls. Half.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, think about it. How many times have Cleveland Browns been in the Super Bowl? They've been in the league for a long, long time. And got one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is what it is. Brady's just, he's the GOAT, man. He's the GOAT. It's all that avocado ice cream and, you know, married to a supermodel. I mean, I guess that's the fountain of youth, brother.
That's what we all should have done. Found supermodels of our own. And
that's right.
We'd be celebrating seventh Super Bowl. All right, Fabs. We'll catch you next week. But if you out there want more Michael Fabiano, SI Fantasy Podcast, SI.com/fantasy. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, my brother.
All right, we are back with Jenny Vrentas. And Jenny, the early game, let's be optimists and let's start with the good side of this. And that's, number one, Tom Brady is going back to the Super Bowl now with another franchise. I don't know if people knew about that. But he didn't play well in this game. I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to say Tom Brady brought the Bucs back. But obviously he's a very big part of this. He played reasonably well in an offense that I would still insist is maybe not the most quarterback-friendly offense in the league. And they're going back. They're going to play a Super Bowl on their home field.
Well, he played really well in the first half, Gary. That first drive, he came out. And there were a lot of games this season where he had a really slow start. So this was completely different. And so from that first possession, it was like this. We were all on notice that, oh my gosh, like this could be Brady's day. They could actually win this. And that is how it turned out. Now, obviously, the second half was very different from the first half, but they built this huge advantage. And that opening drive really just stood out to me because we talked on this show last week that the Brady's, I just merged their two names together there, Gary. The Brady Breeze matchup was like old man football, I think is what I said last week. And then Brady comes out and he's pretty clinical in that first possession. They convert 3 third downs and it was just a really good omen for the day and gave the Bucs a lot of momentum, I think. And some of the interceptions in the second half were ugly. One was under pressure and he kind of threw up a floater. Another one, you know, the safety came over the top. Another one was high to Mike Evans. So he had there were some, you know, mistakes. There were some high throws that resulted in mistakes. Ultimately, the Packers couldn't capitalize on those. But I thought this was an impressive performance because ultimately Brady did what seemed almost unfathomable entering this season.
Yeah, I was going to say the interception where he threw high to Mike Evans in the middle of the field. And that was soon followed by he had another high miss to Chris Godwin on a little out. Those will, I feel like those probably ruined his weekend as far as this goes. But
those two paired together as being the same kind of mistake.
They're just accuracy. They're mechanical problems that he just happened to pop up in the fourth quarter of this game. But all that said, look, he did more than enough, but. I mean, give credit to Todd Bowles here, and we're gonna get into some of the Packers' missteps in this game, but no Antoine Winfield Jr. in this game, and then he lost Jermaine Whitehead in the second half. Mm-hmm. Whitehead had forced a couple of fumbles, including one that ended up being a big takeaway early in the third quarter. But going against Aaron Rodgers with neither of your starting safeties, and trying to sort of stem the tide of this comeback that it seemed like the Packers were about to mount. The Packers went three and out, and then the final drive, they settled for a field goal. That was their three fourth quarter possessions. I mean, the Bucs defense held on.
Yeah. Off of the three Tom Brady interceptions, the Packers only got 6 points, and that was the touchdown they got after the Amos interception. So Jaire Alexander had interceptions on two straight possessions, and the Packers, as you just referenced, went three and out both of those times. So it was pretty, you know, I agree with you, Gary. I mean, the performance of the Bucs defense has been a storyline all postseason. Last week, what they did against Breeze, and this week, what they did against Rodgers.
Yeah, the pass rush was big time in this game. No David Bakhtiari, as we know, but Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett were both huge in this one. 5 sacks of Aaron Rodgers. A lot of heat on him in this game, too. I meant to look up the last time Rodgers was sacked 5 times before we started the show and just neglected to. It's not that long ago. It's that Saturday night game where they beat the Panthers back in December.
Okay.
He was sacked 5 times. So you had some similar problems with this Packers offense that you saw last time where they had what you would really consider a dud game for this offense. But let's talk a little bit about Matt LaFleur in this one and some of the game management issues they ran into. And I always give the caveat, he's going to be criticized, and he'll rightfully be criticized. But there was a good, decade of Andy Reid is a terrible in-game manager, and Andy Reid will never win a big game. And Matt LaFleur is certainly young enough that he can learn from this and be better going forward. I think game management is something that is actually fairly easy for a coach to correct as his career goes on, because you get in more situations. And even if you're a guy who doesn't really want to listen to the analytics guy in your ear, you sort of learn from your mistakes. And Matt LaFleur made some mistakes, most notably kicking the field goal, the chip shot field goal from the 9-yard line instead of going for it on 4th and goal when they were trailing by 8 points. And then obviously, the question is, you need 8 points. Do you try to get the touchdown and the 2-point conversion? If you don't get it, you try and get a stop, and then you get the ball, maybe 60 yards away and try it again. He chose to kick the field goal, trying to get the ball back, and then you probably have to go, 75 yards to get the winning touchdown. But it didn't make a whole lot of sense mathematically when he did it, and it obviously didn't work out. They never got the ball back.
Yeah, it seemed at that point, you have to get a touchdown anyway. So you're that close, you're 8 yards away. You might as well go for it then. It was a strange decision. And I agree with you, Gary. I do think that we underestimate the ability of coaches to grow in certain areas. And I think there's a lot going on the sideline. I think sometimes you're trying to toggle between sending in play calls, managing the clock, analyzing the situation. But this one was... it was more than like a clock management thing or, somehow the wrong play gets sent in. This was like it was the turning point of the game. And I am unclear the process that led to him making that choice.
Yeah. And I think even more troubling, at least for sort of the PR aspect of this, is they had kind of erased this whole, you drafted Jordan Love, you disrespected Aaron Rodgers, what's wrong with LaFleur, all this stuff that had sort of, it had gone, it was water under the bridge based on what they did this season. And now you sort of just unearth this sort of, LaFleur doesn't trust Rodgers, and Rodgers didn't like the fact they were kicking the field goal, is what he basically said in the media availability after the game. So now you got this, it's an ugly storyline that got unearthed, and I don't know exactly what the Packers' thought process was when they took Jordan Love. It obviously is something of a knock to the quarterback in his late 30s who just signed to a big contract, and I know there are some people out there floating, okay, Aaron Rodgers is going elsewhere. Jenny, you may float that if you would like to. I think there is zero chance that happens this offseason. There's absolutely no reason you wouldn't run this back considering what you did this season. But it was just, the play was so metaphorical for everything that happened last spring. And that just added this really ugly element to it.
Yeah, I agree. And they seem to be on different pages after the game. And then Rodgers' post-game comments sounding like he was issuing some kind of farewell, or at least putting that on the table, saying something like, there's a lot of uncertainty here, myself included. It's not the exact quote, but it was the gist of it. So I agree with you, Gary. I don't think this is the year that it would be the pressure point for Rodgers to go elsewhere, but I did think about the fact that, you know, he's on the field with Brady. Brady was at a place where we never thought he'd leave. He handpicks a place where there's tons of weapons, good offensive line. He thinks he can go and contend for a championship, and it works out for him. And I just wondered what was going through Rodgers' mind, seeing that and being like, maybe I can pick my destination. But the question is, you know, if you're Rodgers, like, what are you looking for? I mean, obviously he's been frustrated with the lack of weapons. You know, he wanted a receiver in the first round. They drafted a quarterback. But LaFleur is a good play caller. Other than this decision, which is baffling, which is not a play call, it's a game management decision. Mm-hmm. But overall, like, LaFleur has been a fantastic play caller this year. So, you know, if you're looking for an upgrade in that area necessary, and I'm not saying that Brady was looking for an upgrade. Obviously, he had in that area, he had a good relationship with McDaniels. Yeah. But, you know, Brady was looking for upgrade in skill position players, and he found that in Tampa. It seemed like a ready-made roster. But I guess the question would be, if you're Rodgers and you want to go somewhere else, like, what else do you want out of that partnership?
I know. You just... I mean, we're going to find out in, what, 13 days, but he likely will get the MVP award for this year. The other thing with Rodgers is, and I don't think it's as important as it was in the old Mike McCarthy offense, where it was a little more static, a little more reliant on his improvisational play, but it takes time to build chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. So while I know he wanted a new receiver in there and he wanted new weapons and all that, and he should have gotten them, and you know, we can replay last year's draft, but that doesn't really do anyone any good at this point. But they should have taken a receiver. But the point is, I mean, he has Davante Adams. He has Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who is emerging as a really good weapon. Alan Lazard, Robert Tonyan. He has these guys who he has... I think they're more than enough based on what they did this year, weapon-wise, and he's spent the last 3 or 4 years sort of investing in these relationships, these football relationships here, and off-the-field relationships. I'm sure they're all buddies. But it's like, why would you want to go somewhere and sort of reset on this when it can be just as good next year? There's no reason to think it wouldn't be.
Yeah, and Davante Adams is better than any receiver, for instance, that Brady had in New England since probably Randy Moss. Brady had Gronk, of course, at the tight end position, but Davante Adams, you know, you hear the respect that DBs have for him, and a lot of times it's his release off the line, which we saw in this game a few times. He's just kind of is easily able to shed people at the line. So, yeah, that... The decision to kick the field goal instead of go for the touchdown, Gary, you know, will resonate through the offseason. But the question is, perhaps it resonates for longer, depending on which way the franchise goes from here.
The last thing I'll say about it, because we have to talk about other stuff in the show, but the last thing I'll say about it is, and I very much put myself in this category, those of us who play Madden, it's just... You get to play like 1,000 games, and these game management situations kind of become like second nature. And on top of that, I can't really rightfully criticize Matt LaFleur's play designs or the way he installs things or the way he teaches things. But I can point out, like, oh, he should have used a timeout in this spot. He should have kicked a field goal here. He should have gone for a touchdown here. Those are things that any fan can, and be correct about it, criticize a head coach. But obviously there are 10 million other things that go into being a head coach, and Matt LaFleur ultimately has won 26 games in his first two seasons and has won playoff games and has been to the conference title game. I will say that the two things, I'd be stunned if Rodgers forced himself out of Green Bay after all these years and what they had going this year. But the two things I do think are going to be big changes for Green Bay this offseason. I don't know if Mike Pettine makes it through another offseason. He was kind of, I think he's done a nice job with that secondary. He had a really rough day in last year's conference championship game where, when the 49ers just, they just gashed his run defense. They just found something they liked, and they just went to it again and again and again, and he couldn't stop it. He had another rough one in this one, whether it was the play at the end of the first half, that shades of Greg Williams letting Scotty Miller get behind his cornerback. Now, I would argue it's also very poorly played by your cornerback. And I know Kevin King kind of has his eyes on the backfield because he's expecting some to come out quick to the sideline so they can set up the field goal, and then next thing you know, Scotty Miller's behind him. And the other thing is, I mean, they got caught twice with 12 men on the field defensively, and it wasn't hurry-up situations. It was just situations where they couldn't get the right personnel on the field, and that is very upsetting to see happen in the conference title game.
Yeah, I think that is a more likely departure than Rodgers, and I think that is one of the flaws. And I mean, I covered Rex Ryan Jets teams, and Pettine was there, and it's not an identical scheme, obviously, but there are some similarities. And I think one of the flaws in that system is it's prone to some of these breakdowns, or, you know, games where you just feel like things kind of get out of hand and you don't have, you know, a couple individual players playing certain calls badly can really snowball. And I think that's what we saw in the first half of this game.
I also really wanted the Packers to be more aggressive. I know they end up throwing an interception at the end of the first half, but I really wanted them to be more aggressive when they got the ball back in the 2-minute drill.
You know, I thought so too. And also just in general, there was just a slowness to how the offense was moving. Like, yeah, even outside of 2-minute situations, it didn't seem, there wasn't a lot of tempo. And I wondered, there were certain situations where you thought, hey, this is the time to try to wear them down with a little bit of tempo, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder if in the end they just didn't trust the protection to hold up, but it was, plenty of stuff to second guess in this game. But yeah. We will talk Super Bowl preview here in just a second, but first let's talk about another NFC North quarterback who, it sounds like, mutual decision. Matthew Stafford is going to move on. I think that's the right move for the franchise. I think it's the right move for Matthew Stafford, who I think it's morally wrong to make him sit through another rebuild here and basically just the expiration of his prime on a team that doesn't have a chance to win. So Stafford's going to be out there. I guess the first question is, Jenny, I looked around, and look, the market will determine what the Lions end up getting. There will be teams interested. But I looked around. You see Jamal Adams get 2 first-round picks. You see Laremy Tunsil get 2 first-round picks. You see Jalen Ramsey get 2 first-round picks. I think Matthew Stafford is deserving of at least that, just based on positional value. And, you know, people will say, well, he's 33 years old. I mean, we have a guy 10 years older than that playing in the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying Stafford will age that well, but I think his prime basically has as much left in it as you would get from a mid-20s player at another position at this point.
Yeah, and especially you mentioned the Jamal Adams price, right? You know, that's a safety. I guess a left tackle, a cornerback, those are foundational pieces, and they're younger players, and you hope that they're part of the team for a long time. But I agree with you. It's sort of a shocking price to hear thrown out for a player like Matthew Stafford, who, if he were in a better situation, you think could be he's the kind of quarterback that could help a team win a championship or be a playoff contender. He's just been in these really crummy situations constantly in Detroit. Bad decisions by the organization, bad roster building, bad choices for head coach, etc. So it'll be interesting to see him go somewhere else. And I agree, Gary. I think he certainly should command a higher price than what we've seen suggested.
And I'm I'm very happy for Matthew Stafford at this point because, one, I think he's sort of unfairly depicted as a guy who is a stat accumulator. I think he's been exceedingly valuable for the Lions. I think the only reason the Lions won games for a lot of years was because he was their quarterback, and I think you saw when he went down last year, and he hasn't really had durability problems. He's been dinged up, but the only time he missed a major chunk of time, they lost every game. So the other thing is he sort of – I don't want to say stuck because that's a little bit rude, but he's sort of been stuck in these offenses that are they're the 2010 offenses when everyone was sort of doing that static 11 personnel ISO route type of stuff. That's what they did with Jim Bob Cooter. That's sort of the coaching tree he came off of. You saw Daryl Bevel, who I think at his core is still sort of a conservative coach, but you saw Bevel start to work in some of these more forward-thinking concepts in that offense, and you saw what Stafford did. I mean, Stafford was playing at an MVP level last year before he got hurt. He wouldn't have won MVP because of the defense kept on giving games away, but what you saw from Stafford the last two seasons, if you drop him into, let's say Kyle Shanahan's offense in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I think you have a guy who, to be honest, I think can play at legitimate MVP level in an offense like that if you give him a chance to run it with a good supporting cast for a whole season.
And there are a lot of creative offensive coaches who are looking for an upgrade at the quarterback position. So this could be a really interesting offseason for quarterback movement.
It is. There are, it's Connor Orr, our dear friend Connor, did the sort of Matthew Stafford landing spots story on SI.com. And I mean, he put 10 teams, and it's like, oh yeah, these all 10 of these teams, sure. That's a third of the league. A third of the league should be in the market here. Colts, 49ers. I mean, 49ers are the perfect landing spot for him. I'm sure if Stafford had his way. Patriots, Broncos have tons of weapons. I mean, there are lots of good options here. I don't know about the Rams. I think the Rams are one more year with Goff. We'll see what happens though. But
with Stafford, we have the Watson conversation. We have potentially Tua, you know, if there was some Watson Tua swap, which seems a little bit fanciful, but who knows? Rodgers kind of casting uncertainty. I mean, this could be the year of quarterback movement, Gary, and perhaps quarterbacks are more emboldened because they've seen Tom Brady make the jump so seamlessly.
Mm-hmm. And it will help us fill the content hole. And that's really right. What it's all about this offseason. All right.
Always.
We have Super Bowl participants are set now, Jenny. I'll be honest, I'm a little bit bummed that the Buffalo Bills, who are near and dear to my heart, did not end up making it. I legitimately thought that team was the most fun I have really ever seen mm-hmm. any team be, just because Josh Allen, he played well, but he still had that tinge of he might do something just exceptionally dumb at any moment, and that just adds a real, like, just sense of excitement to every offensive snap that they took. But we have not the Bills, the Chiefs will play the Bucks, and I think the big storyline we're gonna, besides Mahomes and Brady, the big storyline will be who will win, who will score more points in this game. The connoisseur's storyline in this game will be the Chiefs are most likely going to be without both starting offensive tackles. Eric Fisher had an Achilles injury. We don't know at the moment if it will keep him out, but it seems like it will very likely keep him out of this game. So you did just see these Buccaneers edge rushers, Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul, really had their way with the Packers front five in their mm-hmm. NFC title game win. And we've seen the Bucs, they've won with sort of a defense first approach the last couple of weeks here. I guess that's sort of the storyline that I have circled. And the other thing I'll put out there, and sorry, Mike Remmers, but last time we saw Mike Remmers in a Super Bowl, he was getting just all but literally devoured by Von Miller.
Yeah, that was a rough memory for Mike Remmers. Earlier in the show, Gary, we talked about how you kind of have to corral Mahomes with more than one rusher, and that is what the Bucs have the ability to do. I mean, there was literally one play where that's how Rodgers was cornered. It was Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaq Barrett, and also Vita Vey, who was newly mm-hmm. activated. So they have the ability to kind of get to him, but also get to him in a way that he can't escape.
Who do you think's going to win?
I mean, my instinct at this point would be this, the Chiefs, because they have the ability to just put up points, and mm-hmm. it's hard to keep up with that. And I'm just thinking how we felt about Brady 2 weeks ago. And again, like I said earlier in the show, I think the first drive in the first half of the game, it was exciting, and it was, you know, it felt like a very different performance from last week. But then we, with some of those errant throws that cropped up in the fourth quarter, and, you know, we remembered some of the limitations. And however remarkable it is that Brady has gotten to this point, his 10th Super Bowl, yes, it is a defense first team. So if you match up with the Chiefs, who can score at will, it's hard for me to see the Buccaneers being able to put up enough points to keep up. However, all of that being said, like, I don't know. It's really hard to pick against Brady and the Bucs.
I saw in my inbox, and I'm double checking it right now to see if the line has moved yet. I saw Chiefs 3.5. Right now it's down to 3-point favorites. I don't have a ton of good thoughts about this Buccaneers sort of offensive approach and design that they have. I do think the Chiefs are going to win. I think they'll probably win handily. I will say, though, I will open up the possibility that this kind of might end up having sort of a Giants-Patriots type of feel, except Brady's on the other side of it this time around when it comes to maybe the pass rush does just take over, and that's what sort of foils Patrick Mahomes in this one. When we have seen Mahomes play poorly, mm-hmm. I mean, I think back to, he didn't have Tyreek Hill in this game, but 2 years ago when the Colts beat them on a Sunday night and Justin Houston sort of just dominated that game. Could you get that? Maybe.
Yeah, you're right, Gary. If the Bucs are going to have a chance in this game, it would have to be like that Super Bowl 42 or like the Super Bowl 46 where the pass rush just took over, and really the MVP of those games was the Giants pass rush.
It was an interesting championship Sunday. I don't know why, for the first time, when I was watching like Shaq Barrett, I was like, oh right, Shaq Barrett like wrecked Tom Brady in the AFC title game 5 years ago. Like it's weird. It's still
weird.
It is
really weird, yeah.
It added like this new wave of weirdness to once again Brady being on the Bucs.
I know. Sometimes I'm talking about these teams and I get momentarily disoriented because Brady's in the NFC and Brady's teammates with players he wasn't teammates with 10 months ago. Yeah. And Patrick Mahomes and Brady are not in the same conference. So it's just kind of hard to, yeah, it's hard to keep things straight. Back to that Super Bowl 42 game, Gary, I remember beforehand someone asked Plexico Burress his prediction. I think he said 17-14, which was the final score, but I remember that was relayed to Brady and he said something along the lines of like, we're only going to score that many points, like LOL. Yeah. Which is exactly what we would say about the Chiefs. Like, would you right now would be like, oh, the Chiefs are only going to score 17 points. Yeah. But you know, matchups work out differently and crazy things happen. So I kind of like your analogy there. That was smart, Gary.
It would. Well, it's more interesting than just saying the Chiefs are probably going to score 40 points and the Buccaneers will score 20 and we'll turn it off after the weekend does his thing. But
I'm not that interested in the weekend now, only because I've seen the Super Bowl halftime commercial like a million times at this point. And so I don't think I'm very hyped for the halftime show on account of all of these commercials.
Yeah. I don't know if he has a second song, but I've heard that one a lot and he'll probably play it. And it's, you know what? It's a very nice song.
It is a good song. I just have heard it too many times.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Jenny. You will be back with Connor for the Weekside podcast. If you folks out there don't already subscribe to it, please do so now. I have a feeling they're going to talk about the Super Bowl sometime in the next 2 weeks. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show featuring Albert Breer. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.